Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Philippines. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about the merge episode of the season, which is very exciting and unexpected. And I'm here with my amazing co-host, as always, Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you doing today?
Feeling even better than South African beef tastes, Shannon. Though you, once upon a time, got the firsthand experience. I'm intrigued to know, is there something about South African beef? Because Nico seemed to really emphasize that with the Steers TM merge fees, but I wasn't sure if that was like specific, something that South Africans just really revel in, is the fact that their beef is the best out of the world.
Yeah, well, again, I feel like it's so unfair that they keep doing these meat rewards, but I'm the South African, so I have to talk about the culture, but I'm a vegetarian. It's very difficult. South African food in general is just absolutely amazing. And yeah, they're good with the braai, which I can now spell. They have good meat, I think. I think I remember when I first became a vegetarian and we were doing this like long road trip in South Africa when I was 13, and we drove past this like whole biltong shop. I don't know if you know what biltong is, but it's like dried out meat and it's delicious and it smelled so good and there was nothing else to eat. And I was like, if I can get through this and not have meat, I'll never eat meat again. Never ate meat and haven't had it since. So I feel like that was the best test of my will, because South African meat is good.
Wow, your resolve is tougher than biltong.
Yeah. Oh, actually, maybe not. See, I don't remember because I haven't had it in like 12 years.
Well, at any rate, I mean, I'm feeling so good because this was a fun merge episode of Survivor South Africa. I will admit, maybe the outcome, like last week, a little predictable, but there was so much stuff going on strategically. I really do feel like everyone out of the remaining 10 castaways had at least one moment in this episode that really made them pop. So even though we sort of got a predictable boot here in Vusi and we don't know exactly what's going to happen from here on out, there's still a lot of stuff to get into.
Yeah, there were so many dynamics going on. People going off and talking to people they just merged with that day and really having like open and honest conversations, which at times came back to bite them with people that they hadn't known. There were so many extra connections and relationships being made. And yeah, look, Vusi was someone we said we knew probably the least about from the rest of the cast. So now that we've got this cast of nine, not to say Vusi was boring, but like probably the most, I don't know, vanilla or under-edited person on the season. Which is really a testament to the editing, because we still knew quite a bit about him. Like, he was no Chelsea, no purple Chelsea.
Yeah, and even vanilla can make a nice vanilla milkshake coming out of a soft serve machine. That luckily they didn't have Ozzie Luth to like deep throat and put his mouth up directly to the soft serve machine. Though maybe they did that off camera.
Mike, can we get 3 minutes into a podcast without you saying deep throat?
No, it's a vice of mine. We still can't. Maybe next time, Janet. You have a much tougher resolve with meat than I do with using the term deep throat on a podcast.
Now, we've said it multiple times. It's going super well. No, but with Vusi, with him going out now, I think that each character has like a really great, compelling inbuilt story that's not just like, I'm a threat, which was Vusi's main story. So I think it could be really exciting going on here. Obviously, it was like basically a 7-3 vote. So we could see, hopefully not, a couple of really great characters get picked off or pogonged. I really hope that doesn't happen, especially because it's Shanae and Palesa, who I love both of them. And that would be kind of a bit boring. So we'll see what happens. But there's so many wild cards that you just know it's going to get shaken up.
Absolutely. The dynamics are changing just like Shanae's hair color.
I know, that was amazing. And we got some questions about basically the science of this happening. And like, I work for a hair magazine. I'm a hair journalist. That's the thing. And I don't know. Like, I was like, I'm really failing here because I don't know how that happened.
Oh, I'm surprised, because I did a little bit of research myself and I did see things about, like, I guess sometimes if you wash your hair with like well water and something that might have rust in it, that can cause your hair to sort of get this copper color to it. I'm surprised that isn't like one of your like spiffy tips that you write about, not to like, pigeonhole your work too much. But that's from the research I did. We've never seen that happen before on Survivor, which is super interesting. I guess just not a lot of people were using pots as their personal shower. But I kind of wish, you know, wand offs were starting to get sent in for the New Zealand podcast. I kind of wanted a wand off for South Africa's podcast, if only to get a take on Prince's raspberry beret called Strawberry Shanae.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do my next article about the new rust hair trend that Shanae is putting out there. I think it's better than anything the Kardashians are doing.
Goodbye, ombre. Hello, Shanae.
Yeah, I mean, okay, once we're talking about the fashion, let's go and the, you know, the beauty, let's go and talk about the merge, because they merged, which is something that we decoded last week. Most people did. It wasn't surprising. Even like the next time on scene from last week wasn't even in this episode. But then now Aurore, I don't know if I'm saying that right. Such a difficult name to pronounce.
So I believe it's, I believe Nico pronounced it incorrectly. I believe it's Aurore. Is like your beloved Aaron from Survivor, from Survivor New Zealand, but just with a row at the end. Like, these people are about to get into a row, as we see from the preview next week with Tom and PK.
Okay, well, I can't promise I'm not going to say Aurore, because that's what I've been saying for the last 24 hours. But I love that they did the pink buff. Very, very fun. That's something you don't see often. Like, it's kind of like Bion from Survivor Cambodia, which is one of my favorite tribes. So I'm liking the pink buffs a lot.
Yes, a nice Soleonto realness from Survivor Marquesas. I'm loving it. And I also like the, I know they didn't make them, let them, you know, name the merged tribe. Otherwise, we would have gotten like Luzasaius now. but it sounds like a medication. But the interesting thing is that Ara means sun. And if you look at the flag of the Philippines, I believe it's a picture of a sun with like three stars next to it. So it could be like three tribes, you know, going into one sun. Maybe I'm extrapolating too much from this this art department or this production department, but I thought it was a cool merch tribe name, even though Nico might have a bit of a time wrapping his mouth around it, unlike a nice juicy Steers burger.
Okay, now we're saying wrapping his mouth around. Mike, it's been like 7 minutes of the podcast, not even. Please.
They don't coin the term full bloom for a reason, Shannon.
Another Nico nugget that I had, and my cousin pointed out to me, she's like, you should have gone with Nico Knack, because knickknacks are this delicious snack. Do you have knickknacks in America?
No, I'm trying to think. Knickknack is usually the term we give for like a little, another term might be like a tchotchke, like a little, I don't know, it could be like a little figurine, like a Lego thing, or like a little, I don't know, decorative dowel you find somewhere. Like, those are little knickknacks, odds and ends, etc.
Yeah, but okay, so I think it's a British snack, but it's in South Africa as well. It's a snack called knickknacks, and it's like so good. The second she reminded me of this, I'm like, oh, knickknacks, they're like really cheesy, they're amazing. So we should have probably gone with Nico Knacks instead of Nico Nuggets. I'm a couple weeks late to that. But one of the Nico Knacks that I had was that he gives them their tribe name. He's like, you are now Aurore. And he'd just given them the buffs, and the buffs have the tribe name on it. So, like, really wasn't that great a reveal.
What did you think about, actually? Because it's been a while, I feel like, since I'm used to, you know, U.S. Survivor, where they get the note and they sort of meet on one beach. What do you think about the pomp and circumstance of bringing them all together on one beach where Nico can sort of announce it and they can throw their buffs in the air and then go immediately to the... Actually, you know what? I'm going to completely undermine myself, because I'm pretty sure Jeff Probst did the exact same thing in Survivor Triple H. So never mind. We saw this very recently. But other than that, I feel like we don't see it a lot.
Yeah, I love the whole structure of this. The best part of the whole thing, I love finding out, each of them finding out and then coming together. But the best scene in all of it was Tony and PK finding out. PK like sinks to the floor. They're at their absolute wit's end. Like, what an absolute show of emotion. Amazing scene.
Yeah, it was very much like, it was like a Stephanie from Karor, you know, or Stephanie on Oolong, like the see you later Oolong scene where she's just completely spent. And yeah, we talked about this, how Tony especially seems so, I don't know, emotionally overwhelmed, this idea of consistently being on a losing streak and on a downward spiral. And you just felt the drudge of her and PK having to get up and it raining and just her tears over the fact that, you know, I can't light the fire. It's interesting because that mood immediately picks up once A, she has some food in her, and B, since she's back with her main ally, Werner. But I don't know if this means we might get more emotional Tony later on, but to see the difference, you know, the comedy mask and the drama mask from Tony, it was really like her lowest low segued into her highest high with not only winning immunity, but also, you know, helping corral PK into not swinging over.
Yeah, I mean, obviously she was like not in a great place when she started out, but then, as you said, she really bounced back. And I kind of want to talk a little bit about the vote and these power structures that we end up seeing, because Tony and Werner, for me, very much like the heads of the one side. And Tony had a great episode. She was leading a lot of the strategy. I thought she was really good. So they have, you know, Tony, Werner, and then they obviously have Jean and Katinka with them. And then the other side is obviously like Palesa, Vusi, and Sharnay. And they're fighting over these three like independent swing votes. Obviously, Annalise and Tom have a relationship, but it's really just like a fight for each one. Luzon loses every single one of them. So that's why it ends up being like,
in true Luzon fashion.
Yes, exactly. And Annalise, it didn't really ever seem like she was going to go with them. I kind of want to talk about her as a swing vote, but it's funny because once they realize Annalise is out, their best bet is to go to Rocks. And my favorite thing about this episode was just how keen Luzon are to go to Rocks. Like, amazing line from Tom. I know he was bluffing Palesa, but it very much was the idea that they had, which was like, we'll just let the stones decide. Like, amazing line. That's why I want to decide things in every capacity in my future.
Yeah, go to Keith Richards. Let's see what he has to say. Always pull the stones. I mean, Chane says later on, I'm not scared to draw rocks. I've done it. So yeah. It's very much like, it's no big deal. Yeah, your life is on the line and it all comes down to what rock you pick up. But like, don't worry, honey. I've done it before. It's totally okay. It's ridiculous. And you have to wonder why one of the reasons why their plan ends up fizzling is because it's saying, hey, you can either pick going with the majority and possibly being on the bottom, or drawing a rock out of a bag for the second time in the game and also being on the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they're trying to like convince someone like PK, who actually did seem like he would be okay to go to Rocks for the people he had met yesterday. But he's not done it before. For them, they're like, I've already had my brush with death. I'll do it again. Like, this whole attitude of Luzon.
PK, you're gonna love it. It gets your heart racing. It's like the ultimate form of cardio. It's like a Tevin vote out times seven. That's just how nearly orgasmic it feels.
Yeah, like, orgasmic, Mike? It's not even been 12 minutes on the podcast. Anyway, yeah, they've had this like extreme like emotional high at like picking the right rocks that they didn't have to go home. I think they're just chasing that again. They're like, that was exhilarating.
chasing the dragon of like, gotta get that high from drawing rocks. We just gotta be the first Survivor season ever to draw multiple rocks in seasons. Come on, PK. You can be the one to do it. Make Survivor history.
Yeah, it's so like interesting. They're actively trying to get rocks. Like, they are doing that.
They're trying to get their rocks off. And I'm sorry. I know it hasn't been 3 minutes yet, but I just had to put it in there.
I'm going to have to leave. I'm out, guys. See you next week.
Get out of here. Well, I want to talk about that, though, because, I mean, like you said, there are three separate votes, but I feel like Tom, which is so surprising, because I had been talking to the moon and back last week about how I felt like, okay, Tom is obviously the easy consensus merge boot. He was for half a second when Boosie went to Werner, but I was so surprised to find out not only was he one of the swing votes, he might have had the most airtime this episode, but I would almost, and this is a weird comparison, but try to follow me on this one. I feel like Tom was in the Cochrane position where, like, here's a group of people who he's supposed to be loyal to. He's original to them, but he knows they don't like him. And he is going to essentially screw them all over by hopping over to another group that he finds more comfortable, even though he knows he's expendable at that point.
Yeah, and then obviously Werner is the coach in that position. Tom in this episode I actually thought was pretty good, which is a very weird thing to say. Like, yeah, at first when he was looking like the consensus boot and then PK was throwing Jean's name around, I was like, we're geniuses. Like, those are the names we put out last week. But of course, then it elevated completely from there to the point where Tom was a swing vote. And like, for him, Luzon have played him so badly and Werner played him so well that there was just no option that he was going to go anywhere else. Like, he overhears Wussie going to Werner on night one, throwing him under the bus. Then Werner very quickly and very cleverly, you know, goes and tells him about it and earns him that trust. And the way that Werner is like, offers him friendship, like, with Palesa, he has a bit of a weird relationship, and she they have that thing where it's like, okay, we don't like each other, but we respect each other. Werner was like, I can respect you and I can like you. Like, I can do both things. He says they're going to be friends after the show, which I find very hard to believe. But, you know, he says it. He says he offers them a home. He makes them feel validated. He makes them feel heard. And there's just nowhere else that he's going to go where he finally feels like he has a friend after not being treated well on Luzon. And I do think that it was not a very clever way for Luzon to deal with this, because I don't know what their plan was. Like, they came in wanting to take out Tom, which in itself wouldn't have been good for them. Like, they clearly needed him as a number. So then next week, what would they have done? So I think that either they had to like really just completely go to his ego and the whole time through the pre-merge be like being his best friend, trying to butter him up and taking him all the way with them, or they probably like should have thrown a challenge. And I know it's so hard and hindsight's 2020, and that's a very difficult thing to put on people. I get it. But like, we were talking last week about Luzon throwing a challenge. Surely Versailles should have been thinking about it more than they did a couple of weeks ago, because they could have saved someone like a Josie, who could have been huge for them, or an Annalise, who they could have thought, you know, would go back with Sharnay. She didn't, but it would have been a reasonable assumption. Better than Tom, who clearly hated them and jumped at the first minute. So I don't really know what their plan was coming in, even if they, you know, did get rid of Tom here.
Well, I think it goes back to something that Tom said during this episode, this whole adage of the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. Now, though, Tom works definitively against this adage, this episode, if I'm putting myself in Messias's mind frame, let's remember these are all Luzon members. So I think that maybe what they're thinking is maybe they don't suspect that, okay, Tom is definitely not going to jump in bed with all these people who he does not know whatsoever. He's going to stick with us, even though we sort of hate his antics. We know that we're all he's got. I don't think they really suspected, you know, Werner to make this outreach. Or, I mean, we need to talk about Annalise later, because I think Annalise, huge player this episode. Mm-hmm. I think her joining up with the former Blues, the former Mean to Thens, is definitely an underrated move in this episode. I do wonder if Tom ends up flipping over if Annalise does not. You know, here's a question that I want to throw out to you, Shannon. And this is maybe thinking more from a meta perspective, but at this point in the game, does Tom think he can win?
Yeah, of course he thinks so. And that's why it's so hard for me to judge this move, because people are like very much like, oh, he made the right move. Oh, you know, he definitely made the wrong move. I think we got a question from Sheldon Cuppen on Twitter, and he was talking about how it was like branded in Africa, like so bad. You completely screw over your numbers and your original tribe just for personal grievances. But it's like, it's so hard for me to judge what his best move is when he has no chance to win. Like pretty much either way, like, they'll either just get rid of him if he's really annoying them, or they'll probably maybe get a bit greedy and try and drag him to the end. If anything, I think like Mindanao might be a bit more patient. Like Werner could probably do that and drag him to the end. So, like, either way, it's a similar outcome to him, I think. So, I mean, why go with people that hate you? I actually love Tom's self-awareness in this episode. I think he had a line which was like, I could be number 5 with the people who detest me, or number 6 with the people who don't detest me just yet. Incredible line. And I guess he's kind of right. Like, he's on the bottom anyway. At least one way he feels liked, he's probably having a better time. I think his outcome will probably be similar regardless, and I think he has zero shot to win. So, I don't know. I can't really be mad at the move.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think at this moment he might realize that he can't win.
Do you think so?
I don't know if I may just be projecting, but I feel like maybe there's something with like hearing what Boosie's been saying and finding out that Shanae flipped on him. I feel like that was a big indicator as well. And also like a very riveting conversation with him and her down by the beach after the immunity challenge, where he basically makes her fess up about the fact that, you know, she kind of ditched him and was, you know, ready to came to him sort of hat in hand after this to be like, hey, we need your vote. But I wonder if, because like, maybe again, I'm making like the Tom Crin comparison, but it's this idea that like Cochran at that point I think knew that he probably couldn't win, so I would almost compare it as well to like Jonathan Penner in Cook Islands, where he's like, if, you know, he had the infamous confessional very similar to Tom's of, if I flip on the railroads, I'll be a bastard, if I stick with the railroads, I'll be a bastard. You know, I think it's Tom sort of realizing maybe in that moment that, hey, you know what, I probably am not going to win, but at least I will give the favor to people that I enjoy over people who have not only, you know, made my life living hell for a while, but also apparently I am getting on their nerves and they have not told me yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of self-awareness that you need to be like, I cannot win this game. I mean, I would expect it for like a really cerebral player like a Cochran, but I don't know with Tom, like while he was self-aware in this episode, to think that you can't win, like I don't even know with Survivor South Africa, because in other international versions, you don't get money for like how much higher you place. Like at least Cochran was probably like, I might get dragged and be a goat and get $85,000, which is like more money than you actually get for winning Survivor South Africa. Like if they're not giving money to second, third, fourth place, like why is he even there? If he knows he can't win.
But to your point before about Tom's self-awareness, his confessionals, and I guess I'll ring this editing bell once more like I do every episode at this point. I thought it was so interesting how I feel like in a lot of other Survivor seasons, they really build up, and maybe we got this more so with PK, but like they make things much more ambiguous with like how a person's feeling to really build them up as a swing vote as to what will they do. What I really liked about Tom's stuff is specifically when the Luzon side of things came to him, he would say something to their face and then he'd go to a confessional and he'd go like, no, that's bullshit. when they said, oh yeah, Paulisa, which we'll talk about, I thought she gave actually a pretty good pitch to Tom, but when she said like, oh yeah, we'll all be in power together, she's like, it's like, no, I remembered when you were in power and how you treated me. I'm not gonna repeat that again. I just thought it was really fun to watch them try to pitch things to Tom and then to get Tom's like actual internal monologue via his confessional while it's happening. I thought it was a really cool thing to compare it against, considering that, again, if we're going to this long-term storytelling and seeing not only has how Tom has affected Boosie, Palesa, and Chane, but vice versa, to watch that tug of war finally manifest now that the Visayas members are going to tribal council again. It was really interesting to watch.
Yeah, the Palesa scene, as you said, you know, specifically was very, very interesting. Like, he bluffed Palesa and he bluffed me. I thought it was going really well for her. I was like, oh, of course Palesa is the only one who knows how to handle Tom. Like, it went so badly with Shanae, but now she can get to him. She's like, we respect each other. We don't have to like each other. Like, we can work together. And she starts off and she's like, we don't beat around the bush with each other. We're truthful with each other. And he's like, yep. And then he lies straight to her face. I think that's why I was so surprised. It seemed like it was really going well. And then he's just in confessional giving her the finger.
Yeah, he plays both her and Boosie, the double bird, in the confessional, which not to be confused with the glorious amounts of chicken they had at the merch feast.
Yeah, another thing that I thought I really liked from him, again, I'm giving so many compliments to Tom, but you know what? When he deserves them, he's going to get them. I like that.
Give some Tompliments, yeah.
Tompliments. I really liked how he lent into his persona very well. And again, this really showed a lot of self-awareness that I guess maybe I am underestimating him to a degree in where he might be in the game, where he thinks he is in the game. But I really liked how they were telling him to vote for Katinka, and he was like, I'm gonna vote for Katinka because she throws her weight around. Like, if that's who you're voting for, then whatever. You know, he was very much like, I'm not strategic and I'm hyper emotional. Like, he was gonna vote. He's lying to them. He's using that persona in the way that they think of him, and he knows they have that perception of him, to lie to them effectively. And I thought that was really good as well.
There was also a really interesting moment when he talked with Werner, which I will go on briefly on a tangent to say, how the hell did Werner make it out of this vote without his name getting dropped even once? Not only for the vote, but at tribal council, when basically Nico asks, like, hey, who do you think is in charge of the majority alliance? And his name is not even like, no W sound comes out of anybody's mouth. For a guy with two idols and now one of only three guys left in the game is absolutely insane. That's besides the point.
He's
I'm sure
so
we'll talk about it, but
we will.
But
so
Tom,
good.
but Tom says in the confessional, you know, like, I seek immediate validation, which I admit is a weakness. Now, can he improve on the weakness? Absolutely not. But I feel like that's a great like psychological marker we can keep in Tom. And that's another reason why he got swayed over is, you know, he goes to the Luzon people and they're sort of like, yeah, we can do something. Well, as Werner just sort of gives him the bill of goods of like, hey, you know what? You're good with us. Tom's like, he literally says, yeah, that's all I need. I'm good with you. Don't give me any more guff. That's all I need. I'm good. I'm going to vote with you.
He was absolutely never going to go a different way after that scene that Werner had with him. And we'll have to talk about how great Werner was in this episode for a lot of different reasons. But like, I don't know. Yeah, if he's seeing that he has no strategic options on either side and he's just like in a bad spot either way, like, go with the people who make you feel good. And so often Survivor is just that. Just go with the people that you're going to go with, the people that you like, the people that, again, they made him feel happy, feel heard, feel validated. Like, it's just a different emotion. And it's so hard to go against that when people are offering you friendship to go for you know, something that's way, way harder and just not as good as a social situation. You know, that might have worked for Palesa earlier when he didn't have other friends. Like, when it was Mariska, it was like, well, he hated Mariska as well, and he also hated Palesa, but he could work with Palesa. But now it's with people he likes versus the people that he doesn't like, so it's just like an obvious decision for him. Plus, in the way, he's going to Rocks.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Maybe he could have, you know, if he knew they were voting for Vusi, which he did, maybe he could have told Palesa to play the idol, but that never really seemed like an option. So basically, it's like, not only are you voting with the people that you hate over the people that you like, you're also gonna pick a stone for them, which is fine, according to Luzon.
Exactly. And Tom, I think it says it all when Tom in his voting confessional for Vusi says, you screwed me over three times. Now it's my turn. I don't know what he counts as the three times. I guess if you count Vusi voting for him in the first vote when he didn't go home and then forcing the rock draw, maybe that's number two. But they voted together. Oh, actually, no.
Maybe
now that I remember,
Vusi
voted for Chane. Vusi voted for Chane at that Mariska tribal council.
That's
so
true
maybe
as well.
He felt that was a third strike and you're out, but maybe the Werner thing could be it as well. But
it was a lot
there.
It was not
needed.
A good relationship. He's definitely not going to Rocks for Vusi. Like, in what universe is Tom picking a stone for Vusi when he can just go to the bottom of another alliance? Like, just do that.
Yeah. But then again, I will say that even though, to your point, we sort of knew, I felt like after he talked with Werner that he was going to hop over to the other side, I just thought it was really fun to, and granted, I think Tom is really an open book in terms of his emotions, but to be able to get a glimpse into how the pitches are affecting him emotionally was a lot of fun. And there were some moments, like you said, when I was genuinely convinced, like, oh, he might actually flip over. But at the end of the day, Tom's going to Tom, and he decides to go with the people who, you know, treat him nicer than those that have kind of treated him not so nice over the past month.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about his relationship with Annalise, which I think was actually really crucial here, more crucial than it might have come across in the edit, and also Annalise in general, who should have been a swing vote, very important part of this episode. Let's talk a little bit about her. Annalise is the one who says to Verna first out, she's like, we should get Tom on our side, and Annalise is someone who's worked with Tom before. Tom went to Rocks to save her. So that, I think, could be a really important relationship and maybe something as well that played into why Tom would have gone there. For Annalise, I'm so surprised that she didn't seem like a swing vote at all. Her relationship with Sharnay, besides the fact that Sharnay said she wanted to talk to her, we never actually saw that conversation if it ever happened. And we saw them talking on the bench last week, so you would think that closeness was still there and that was still a really key relationship and, like, nowhere to be seen.
Well, we talked about this last week that from what we saw, Sharnay was giving a lot of information to Annalise. Not so much the other way around. I think that was a very smart move on Annalise's part, and maybe that was sort of been a warning sign, a red flag or a rusty red flag for Sharnay that, hey, she's not that into you. And she sort of experiences that when they get to this new fully refurbished camp with gin and tonics all around, which I want to talk about later, sort of the responsibility behind that decision. But she says, okay, she's talking with John, she's talking with Katinka. She's talking with Tony, you know, this she might be in more hot water. She might be more entrenched in the blues than they initially think. But I have to give her so much credit here because in an episode that really tried to draw on the line of reds versus blues, not only was Annalise able to infiltrate the other side, but entrench herself so well, nobody even batted an eyelash. They said, oh, yeah, she's voting with us. No worries. And I guess if you look at it from the perspective of like the pre-Rock Draw stuff where, you know, yeah, Annalise was with Sharnay and Tom, but if you give her the option of like, oh yeah, go with Palesa and Vusi, she might be more reticent to do so. But like you said, this one 30-second scene, well, it's Werner and Annalise, again, capitalizing on that slight alliance from last week, sitting by the beach where Werner says, you know what, I think the safest vote might be PK. And Annalise not only throws the target onto Vusi, but also suggests to Werner to bring Tom in. I mean, that's what happened this episode. Later on, when they talk about like who's running things and we talk about how much Werner is really doing a lot, but it just isn't getting picked up on from a threat perspective, I'm willing to put Annalise up there as well, because she essentially, in the course of this one beach scene, controlled the outcome of the entire episode.
Yeah, I mean, there was an element of her having control, so I think really good job for her. And then I think there's also some credit we have to give to Verna and to the people in that Mindanao side for making sure she's not a swing vote by making her feel heard and by what she wants happening, if it works for them. She wants Vusi gone. Vusi does go. So if she is pulling some of the strings then, she really does feel like a strategic equal, which it very much did seem like in that scene. Whether that's genuine from Verna's side, I don't know. But what she wanted to happen did happen. So she's got control there. She's got more friends on that side now than the Luzon side. It's like, why would she flip over? So she's like entrenched in that side now. And I do find her arc very, very interesting because she hasn't played with an OG Luzon member since they swapped the first time. So for those tribe dynamics to change on Versailles without her, that must be really jarring for her. Like, Sharnay comes in and is like, no, we're all good with Tom and with Vusi and Palesa now. But like, Annalise isn't. You know, they targeted her in a Rock Draw. So while Sharnay has made that connection over days and days and days, Annalise can't just be like, okay, well, you're friends with Sharnay, so now I'm friends with you. That would be really hard. And she does have a relationship with Tom. It can't just be like, we hate Tom now, because Tom went to Rocks for her. That was a connection that she had the whole time. Again, coming back, but I mean, that must affect someone when someone literally puts their life on the line for you, or when someone targets you as their main target. They were trying to get rid of her in episode 2. So why would she want to work with them now? I just think for her to go from that initial swap and to have everything happening like on the side in this bubble, this Versailles bubble without her, it's just so hard for her to jump back into those tribe dynamics that have just completely changed since she played with any of those people, where she has new and very current connections with Verna, Katinka, Jean. Now Tom's on that side. Like, she has a ton of friends on that side, and she just has Sharnay on the other side with a bunch of people who try to vote her out. It just wasn't a good option for her, so she stayed with Mindanao.
And not to mention, maybe if they said, okay, we're getting rid of Sharnay, maybe she might be more reticent to, you know, vote against her.
Yeah.
But it's Vusi, someone who, again, voted against her in that Rock Tribal Council. And you bring up a great point, and it can't be said enough, that, you know, the other of the five former Luzons, four of them came from the same tribe that has been together since, what, like, day nine or so.
Yeah.
Annalise has been out by her lonesome. These four have been inside having a big old house party. She's been locked out in the rain, trying desperately to make her way into the house. Now she finally does, and they're like, "Ah, yeah, come join us." And she's like, "Nope, I'm going to hang out with these other people who I've made much more connections with out in the rain." This is a weird metaphor, but it makes sense in my brain.
Yeah.
I think that from a social perspective, what Annalise did made much more sense. Plus, I mean, with these early votes on Survivor, you also kind of want to go with where the power lies. And I think between Werner having two idols and, you know, her making a lot of close bonds with some of the women specifically within the former Mindanaos, I think that it's a fantastic position. I'm sure we can talk later about, like, if this path continues and if this seven ends up being the final seven, how things will go. I think Annalise stands a very good chance of fracturing that group and making her way close to the end of the game. I don't think it's as easy as we'll get rid of Tom, we'll get rid of Annalise, and then we'll have, you know, the remaining five Mindanaos battle it out.
Oh, I definitely don't think that she's on the bottom. She's pulling more strings than definitely Jean, even more than Katinka.
That's not saying much.
No, I know. But like, if you look at that group, it's like very much Tony and Werner. And then Annalise, those were the only people who seem to be really making strategic decisions. So I think that she definitely has a lot of sway there. Some of those people in that group, like Katinka, for example, seem closer to her than anyone else. So she would definitely have her people if it got down to it. I was kind of seeing her as like a Patty Hearst figure, where Sharnay is like, "We're going to rescue you from Mindanao, and you've been with them the whole time as like a hostage." And then she comes out and she's not just with Mindanao. She's like at the forefront of what Mindanao is doing. I thought it was really interesting. But also, I think that she's seeing the new Luzon, which was herself, Werner, Jean, and Katinka, three of her tightest allies at the moment. She sees them as the main contingent, and the way that she phrases it to Werner is she's like, "It's us four, and then we'll pull in Tony and we'll pull in Tom." So she kind of sees it as maybe them four would be at the top, and then Werner has his thing with Tony, but then she also has her thing with Tom. So it's like she has her options anyway, and she didn't have to go to Rocks with Luzon. You know, she didn't have to play with Pelesse and Vusi, she has no connection with, so I don't really have a problem with her at all. I'm going with the Mindanao side. I thought that she played it really well. And by the by, for Tony and PK, who were very upset, you know, on Blue's behalf, on Mindanao's behalf, for not throwing the challenge, I think Josie would have gone back to Pelesse and Vusi in about 5 seconds, whereas Annalise was with Mindanao, no questions asked. So good job on Werner and them for not throwing the challenge and earning themselves an ally for the future.
Okay, can we talk about PK? Because...
we have to.
Wow. Love what he's bringing to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Man, has he tanked his game in the past week of Survivor.
Yeah, the best thing about PK is that he was kind of underedited in the beginning. He and Tevin especially, they kind of seemed like, as we said, the straight man of this crazy Survivor sitcom, just while Martinez was going crazy and all that stuff was happening at Mindanao, which is still a thing. Thank you as well to the tribes for very much like loosely staying in those OG tribe ways so I can keep going with my piney nicknames. But yeah, we thought PK was kind of one of the sane normal people, but nope, no one on this season is sane. He's one of the wild cards, one of the crazy ones too, and I am absolutely here for it. I am loving him more and more every week.
Well, I wonder if PK, after getting rid of Tevin, has now felt he's put a Survivor crown on himself and says, "Look, I am the king now, so I can do this strategic maneuvering," not really realizing that yes, he did something pretty awesome from an entertainment perspective and flipping on his main ally, but without Tony there by his side, it doesn't happen. And so to have him be just so brazen to the point where everyone knows that he's blatantly going to both sides and speaking out of both sides of his mouth is just, it's not a great position to be in whatsoever. to the point where, you know, Vusi in his like final word / Ponderosa video this week basically said, like, "I'll vote for anyone in the final tribal council but Tom and PK."
Yeah.
Because PK swore up and down the beach that he'd stick with him. He turned out to immediately break that when he voted Vusi out.
Yeah, and also the move to take out Tevin just like continues to look worse and worse. He does not have an ally in the game. Like, he literally has no one. Even Tony, who's like obviously his closest person, firstly, it's not even close how much closer she is to Werner than PK. She's also like putting it out there to test PK. So she has all the cards in that relationship with PK. And also, like, she's all that he has, and he's basically nothing to her. Like, she has so many other close allies. So he really doesn't have anyone. I love that he really was serious about getting revenge on Mindanao. Like, I thought last week the emotions might die down and he might be like, "I was, you know, in the heat of the moment, merge, new thing." He got to the beach and he was like, "Let's take out Jean. first things first, I'm taking out Blue. I was like, oh, he was serious. Like, he was really serious about getting revenge on Mindanao for no reason.
Yeah, and I mean, he was, like you said before, he was willing to draw rocks. He was willing. He said, listen, I'll flip over as long as Tom does, as long as we can force a 5-5 tie. I'm golden. I mean, I had to give it up to this guy because he has such a brazen attitude. I mean, he is, I think he's the personification of a big move, Shannon. I think that, like, Jeff Probst put a bunch of big moves, like, in a computer and it 3D printed out PK and a lightning bolt struck it. And now he's come to life. And now he's ready to just, like, make as many big moves as possible. I mean, I just loved the way he approached so many things. Like, when he's talking with Shawn A and Vusi and Palesa on the beach and they're talking about, like, why he should swing over. And he basically just insults Shawn A to her face by being like, I don't think you could bring Tom over.
Yeah, I'm like, he's really not endearing himself to his new allies. Like, it wasn't a very good conversation with Shawn A where she's like, he thinks I'm dumb. And then it wasn't a very good conversation with Tom. And they're, like, in it together as far as PK thinks. I mean, Tom is never going to flip, as we've said. But he's like, it's us two. It's like they have no relationship. They don't even really even seem to have any goodwill. But he's, like, trying to make this decision with him. And, yeah, I did love that he was so willing to go to rocks for the people that he had met yesterday. Look, it's not as crazy as Ace, who was, like, very happy in a very nice Big Five majority. But, you know, PK isn't in a great spot with Mindanao. Werner seems very keen to take him out. It's not a good situation for him, but I do think there has to be some better solutions than just, you know, going to rocks with these strangers. And also, I think the fact that he's in the position where rocks might be one of the only outcomes to him. Otherwise, he's stuck with these Mindanao people who hate him and who are going to probably gun for him at some point. Not hate him, but, like, they're not in a good place with him. The fact that he's in that position probably says a lot about what he's done in the last few episodes to get himself there.
Now, I will give him credit because he does end up flipping over to the other side. Though, let's talk about this test PK thing. I'm trying to think about, like, an example from Survivor history that it reminds me of. I don't know if you have one. I guess it's sort of like what they did in Fiji with Dreams, where they're like, we'll tell Dreams one plan and then we'll actually do this other thing. I believe that was during the Edgardo vote.
Yeah, I was thinking more like Mike Holloway testing Will Sims 2 at the merge.
I was thinking that too.
But I mean, that Will Sims hadn't been with Mike Holloway, so, like, it made more sense. Whereas, like, the people who are testing PK are the people who know him. It's like, we have to test him because we know what he's about, not because, like, oh, we don't know because we've never voted with him before. We have to test him because we have voted for him before, with him before. That's the problem.
Yeah, we know his experience. Again, it's the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So I guess this brings up the question for me. You know, we talked through the ramifications of Tony keeping PK over Josie last week. Do we think that Tony realized how volatile he would be as an ally this week? And we can definitely talk about her ability to sort of, like, quote unquote, control him and say, OK, no, we're going to flip back over. And they voted together for Palesa, which I think was a great move for Tony to vote in solidarity with him to really keep up this guise of, hey, we're all one big alliance working to the plan together. But what do you think her reaction was to all this flipping back and forth he was doing on the beach?
Yeah, I think that someone like Josie, though, might have been even a bigger threat because she really could have gone in and done some damage and really given some power back to that Luzon side. Whereas, like, PK is just running around and then just like, OK, you go there, play on the side. Like, he's not really doing any damage. He ends up voting with them anyway. And they've got control over him. Like, they've got a plan to deal with it. So they're just like, he's doing his own thing. He thinks it's so cute. He thinks he's really playing, thinks he's really making things happen. But it's just not going to happen. Tony was probably like, you know what, whatever PK can throw at me, I think I can take it.
What did you think? I saw this comparison online when I was looking up some Survivor South Africa stuff beforehand. Is PK the South African Abby Maria?
I hadn't thought about that. Maybe because the optics are so different. I mean, no, I don't. I mean, he's not. Abby Maria, like, pains people socially, and PK hasn't been doing that from what we've seen. It's just that strategically he's just so insane. I don't know what the, you know what he is? He's just the ace of five episodes later. He's this new South African ace.
I just love this idea. Maybe there's this spirit within the Philippines, like this, like, Loki like spirit that just, okay, first an infected, you know, ace, and then once Ace left the game and had to find a new host and it went into PK. That's why PK was so under the radar the first few episodes. He hadn't been yet possessed by the spirit of the island.
Oh my god, I'm imagining them voting out PK and Werner, just like it possessing Werner, and then we're like, what happened to Werner? That's what's gonna happen.
Yeah. Exactly. Like he uses his two idols on like two different allies at the same time, does like a three amigos times seven, completely blows everything up. But yeah, the thing I love about the like PK specifically talking with Tom later on in the episode to give him the pitch is like, it's almost like when you have like friends of friends meeting for the first time and like working together on something, like they barely know each other. But now PK is like, I'm willing to put my life on the line for you.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was such an awkward scene where like, firstly, again, Tom is always like, nope, just in confessional talking about how he's absolutely not going to do that. He's like, you don't need me. Like, you already made the decision. I'm not going to be a number for you, my brew. He said my brew quite a few times.
He really did.
Yeah, very South African thing. But yeah, it was just so awkward that he was like, it's you and me in this together, basically, like trying to make them a duo when they're just like, no relationship there. As I said, not even like, it doesn't really even seem like they like each other. So like, just a very awkward twosome.
And I was trying to figure out what the rationale was between Tom telling PK that the Mindanaos were initially pitching getting rid of PK to Tom. Do we think it was like to just get him off its back? Do we think it was to sow distrust? Was there anything behind that in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I mean, for him, I don't know. Had he heard that? Because that is true. I mean, Verna had thrown out PK's name, but I just don't know how much Tom knew. I thought this was interesting because I thought this was where Tony pivoted a bit. This might have been a little bit where she was like, we can do what we want with PK. He'll run around. We have control over him. But then when he kind of hears that he might have been a target, she does kind of go and reconcile that to the point where she ends up actually voting for Palessa. She also tells PK for real that it was going to be Vusi. Four votes on Vusi, she said, and then them two were going to vote for Palessa for some reason, even though that's like not a perfect split vote by any means. They actually did end up having the numbers at 7-3 to split the vote, but they didn't split it well. They split it 5-2-3 instead of 4-3-3, which could have been bad if they had played an idol. So she ends up telling him the actual plan. She ends up voting for Palessa, doing what she, I think just because she had told him she would. At that point, she was like, I'll probably just do what I said I was going to do so I don't, like, lose PK completely and he might just go completely nuclear next week. So I think that she did pivot a bit and try to be like, okay, pulling him in, it's all going to be okay. He ends up voting as he did. Palessa doesn't play an idol, so he does earn that trust, but I don't know how anyone can feel comfortable voting with PK going forward.
I mean, good readjustment on Tony's part. The test idea was really interesting to begin with, because like you said, this isn't like a completely new person. This is someone who Tony specifically had been working with very closely for a good portion of time. And for her to suggest this idea of like, just in case PK gets squirrely, we'll suggest Palessa. That is like it's a good, like best of both possible, a win-win situation, if you will, because if PK ends up ratting the plan out, Palessa plays the idol, they're voting for Vusi anyway, now they flush an idol out. Actually, that's probably the optimal thing. They're almost encouraging
PK. Yeah, they wanted him to flip.
So they wanted him to flip, which is crazy, but if he doesn't flip, then, all right, they just end up being like two spare votes. But like you said, once PK sort of finds out that things were turning in his direction, Tony was able to get away with being vague. And it's really good on her part, but also maybe not so great on PK's part. They didn't like ask for clarifying details. I believe Tony said something along the lines of like, yeah, like the plan is to vote Vusi, but we're going to vote Palessa because it you don't need to know. It's fine.
Because we want to be like an incorrect split vote where if she does play an idol for Vusi, like it still wouldn't work out because we put two votes on her instead of three for some reason.
Fill in those blanks. I'm playing Survivor here, but Tony being able to keep him in there. I mean, I wonder if one of the reasons why PK went over is because he sensed that Tom was not going to flip as well. And as he said, they're sort of like unconventional, bedfellows at this point in that, you know, I'll flip if you flip. So again, I'll give him kudos for sticking in the majority. But considering the couple of times when, you know, between Verna targeting him, Annalise saying he's powerless, and then now this preview next week where it seems like him and Tom are definitely not good new buddies right now, it's not looking great for PK at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, for all of the great bluffing that Tom did throughout the episode, even though he was trying to be a little bit vague at Tribal Council, I think it was fairly obvious to me at Tribal Council that he was going to flip, and I think that PK just saw the writing on the wall and was like, I will flip to go to Rocks, but I'm not going to flip to a minority. Like, that's where I draw the line for some reason, which I guess, you know, does make sense. But yeah, he kind of has to come back to Mindanao with his tail between his legs. It's kind of like a partner who, like, catches you maybe, like, flirting before you actually cheat, but then you get caught out and you go back. I don't know why I picture it as like that. But it's like he doesn't want to be voting with Mindanao at all and just kind of has to in the end. And they have no goodwill towards him. Like, he's already a target for them. So, yeah, he's kind of like a hostage in that situation now. Mm-hmm. And, again, really very much because he gave up all of the power that he had had, which was completely tied to Tevin. I think a really good outcome for him would have been to, you know, go with Mindanao, have that power with Tevin, be connected there, then hopefully have Tevin win in some sort of Verna versus Tevin thing, maybe, if that those two power structures, like, midway through the merge, and then, you know, get rid of Tevin towards the end, kind of like an Adam Klein trajectory, I think, would have been really good for him. It just makes a lot of sense to me. It would have been difficult, but, yeah, it would have been a much more surefire way to the end than just, like, I'll get rid of all my allies and all my power, and now I'm just kind of here, and everyone wants to vote for me, and this is where I'm at. PKY. Like, why PK?
Why PK? Lots of letters being thrown around there. But again, he's making the game fun and exciting, but it's so interesting that through the past three episodes of Survivor South Africa, he has become by far the most chaotic player left in the game. And considering that he's in the majority, that will bode very interestingly. I think if we're talking about whether or not a pagonging is going to happen over the next couple of episodes, I feel like PK might be one of the main indicators to show us that it might not be so cut and dry.
Yeah, oh, when PK's there, anything can happen because he is the ultimate wild card. But I want to transition a bit from talking about people who didn't do so well in PK to someone who did so well in Verna. We said we were going to talk about this. He's so good. Like, that Tom scene was such an amazing show of his social game. Like, he should submit that to, like, the Strategic Survivor Emmys, just that one scene of how good that was. It just personified everything that he does so well socially in the game, taking those skills as a pastor to make him feel, like, really heard, really validated. He's like, we understand you, plus we have a majority, that's helpful, and just completely swayed Tom over to his side. I thought this was amazing from him.
Are the Strategic Survivor Emmys, aren't those just basically the fishies at this point?
Yeah, well, he submitted that for consideration, and I'm pretty sure he wins the fishy this week.
All right, we will, on behalf of Stephen Fishback in absentia, we will give the fishy to, even though Tom finds a lot of fishies in the ocean and takes a lot of pride in that, we'll give Werner the fishy this week. Though maybe he should share it with Annalise, because again, she really dictated how it would go over the course of this episode. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is, this and the bond he made with Tom is just such a larger sign. I know we talked last week about the difficulty in Survivor of representing the social game and the interpersonal bonds you make in something that's edited inherently strategically, but this is a big indicator of it, that Verna was able to go down with Tom and just make a super quick 30-second bond with him. And look, maybe Tom was looking for a friend, so, you know, he had a much better chance of doing it than maybe with somebody else. But the fact that he was able to connect with Tom on a personal level, and like Tom said, he got that immediate validation from him, that was the main thing that got him to flip over. And Verna still keeping up the biokineticist lie when he's talking about the abductor muscles and boring everyone to death by blabbering on and on at the immunity challenge. Like, again, I know I said this before, but I'm still in disbelief how this man has not only has two idols, everyone knows he has two idols, yet nobody is throwing his name out there. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so out of the 10, here were the people whose names were thrown out in this one episode. You know, Vusi, Palesa, Tom, Jean, Katinka, and PK. That's 60% of this cast. And how is one of them not Verna? Like, they're just not coming for him. And as we said last week, it really is an issue. Now he's got two idols. He's got so many allies. He's like, he's best friends with everyone. Like, he's the opposite of PK. He has too many friends. He should give PK some of his friends. Like, it's not fair. Like, share a little bit. He's just in such a great spot, and he has earned it with just, like, a stellar social game. And then if that ever falls through, and the fact that he's a massive threat finally reaches people, he's still going to have two idols. So it's going to be hard to get rid of him.
Well, it's interesting because I don't want to get into, like, the gender of it all, but there's a reason why I think he was able to go to Tom, and why Vusi came to him as soon as the merge hits. You know, maybe they benefit from the fact that there are fewer guys around. And when it comes to, you know, bonding with new people, it's sort of like a like sees like type of thing. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass here, but I do feel like maybe one of the reasons why he was able to make close connections with some of these important people in this episode is because they're like, well, there aren't a lot of guys left. Werner seems like a good guy. Let me, you know, pull him aside and talk to him, even if he has more nefarious intentions.
Yeah, I mean, I do see that. And I think it works both ways. I think the fact that Annalise can come and be that mother figure to Katinka and make a bond there is, you know, obviously exactly. based on gender as well in some capacity. So, yeah, it does work both ways. And when something becomes like a rare commodity in the game, which now is basically being a man on the show, there's only three left at this point now that Vusi's gone. Like, I think that you can use that to your advantage, you know, like Werner and Tom can sit down over a braai, or over like a theoretical braai basically, and be friends afterwards. That's what they say, that they're going to be friends after. They can probably imagine hanging out or whatever, and that might come down to the fact they're in a more similar demographic to some of the others. It is kind of crazy that so there's only three guys left now: Werner, PK, and Tom. And I still think it's pretty likely that a man wins the season, and obviously I don't think Tom or PK can win, so yeah, I think Werner has a very good shot.
I would agree. I think from both an edit perspective and just a common sense perspective, that dude has two idols in the final nine. It's, as we talked about, weirder things have happened. Hello, James Clement. But honestly, I could see it happening, though. Who knows? We said back in the early seasons, I mean, you picked Tevin as your winner because you were so impressed with him through the first four episodes.
Ah, thank you. And look what happened. Who's your winner pick, Mike?
Werner! So
you just wanted to bring that up.
Damned if I do, damned if I don't. But then PK happened, and PK's still in the game here. So I might go with like the reservation here that as long as PK's in the game, I'm still not sure who wins the season at this point.
Yeah, it's not just PK. Like, there's other wild cards there too. And like, look, the fact that the people on the bottom are Palesa and Sharnay, and like, look, if anyone's going to be on the bottom, I trust those two. They're both, I know they don't have a lot of options right now, but they're both super savvy. Palesa has an idol. They're two great players. So I trust them more than I would most people in that really unfortunate position. I also want to talk a little bit about Toni, who I thought was, again, good here. She mastered a lot of the strategy, and we saw her talking about it. She was like, Tom is the decoy. We're telling PK it's Palesa, and then we're going to go for Vusi. Like, she was the one basically outlining it. And you know what? That can be difficult to kind of communicate to your allies. It's like, hey, tell PK this, tell Palesa this, but we're actually going with that. And you know what? It all kind of came off without a hitch. So I think I credit her with a lot of that.
Especially because her and PK have been separated from the others for so long. Yeah. You know, like, she was previously on the tribe with Werner and John, but for the past week, which have obviously been so traumatizing for her, she sort of has been away on her own. And we were wondering how the Werner-Toni partnership would come back together, you know, since Toni was on the PK train of like, how dare, you know, Werner not throw the challenge last week. It seemed like everything's fine. Would you wager to say that Toni and Werner are the strongest duo in the game at this point?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I probably would have said Sharnay and Annalise were up there with the scene that we got of them last week and just knowing how close they were from day one. But now it's like, who else really is there? I mean, Vusi's gone, so that Vusi-Palesa thing is over. They're super tight. And again, it speaks to Toni, where it's like, she'll react with emotion. She was upset last week, but she can come around. So by the time, you know, she's gotten to the merge, she's over it. She's happy to go with Werner. It's all good. It's only PK, though, who's the one who's like, nope, I'm still mad about it. I'm still going to get my revenge. So Toni usually does come around. And again, she was one of the very few people whose name wasn't put out there. So that's great for her as well. Katinka kind of became like the target above them both and the figurehead, which is probably a credit to both Toni and Werner that they're able to push this like 19-year-old in front of them as a strategic threat, and probably not the best look for Katinka to become that target.
Well, first of all, congratulations to Katinka. She has a new food baby that she's taking care of, which muscle I love. She had the bot. She had the box and everything. I enjoyed the chocolate fountain at its bar mitzvah one day. But yeah,
why is Katinka's food baby Jewish? I don't know.
It's a free world, Shannon. It can raise whatever religion that it wants to be. It can't eat pork, but it can eat beef as a result. But the Katinka thing was so interesting to me, because when Sharnay first threw her name out, I'm like, okay, why? But then we get a bit of it here at Tribal Council, which I guess, and we're supposed to read between the lines. I mean, we saw scenes earlier of Katinka like making jokes about how when they were talking about like rationing out the coffee, they're like, Katinka said, oh yeah, when there are less people here, we'll have more to drink. I mean, I didn't necessarily remember what Sharnay was insinuating, which was that like she felt like they were being treated like guests. Mm-hmm. Like Katinka in particular was going around camp and talking about how, you know, when they're gone, then we'll be able to, you know, enjoy more things, which sounds hostile from her point of view, but I don't know. It came off pretty light from my perspective. Maybe that's just because I know Katinka and Chande does not know her from a hole in the ground. She hasn't met her yet at this point.
Yeah, I think that there might have been a little bit of social stuff putting people offside, but I do think that it goes beyond that to the point where they identify the fact that Katinka might be the glue. That's what they keep calling her, the glue. And they're probably correct in that. And look, it's no coincidence, I think, that Shanae is the one who's like, I want Katinka gone. She's the one who's most on that train, because Katinka is the new best friend of Annalise, who was her best friend. Like, she's really won that tug of war for Annalise's vote in particular. So, of course, Shanae sees Annalise with her new best friend and is like, has to get out the other woman in Katinka. And they see her as like being in the center there, and they can maybe move some other pieces if they get rid of her. So I do think there's a really big strategic component to it as well. But yeah, probably socially, Shanae's not loving Katinka as well, because she stole her best friend and she's monitoring the coffee. And it's hard when you're a young girl, you're younger than everyone, like, you are a woman, to be telling people what to do in any capacity, even if you're not coming across as super bossy, if the people are older than you, if it's like maybe a gender thing as well, people are not going to embrace that as very much.
I mean, they called Katinka the coffee queen, and the queen was not using like a yes queen mentality. It's like, she, no, you're like, ruling over us. Yeah, except let them drink coffee or not. Let's drink coffee every other day. I also loved the moment at Tribal Council when Katinka gets labeled as the kingpin, because Nico asked for a reaction, and all she could do is just sort of like confusingly throw her arms up, like, where the hell did this come from? And it elicited a laugh from everybody, even Vusi, who's on the other side. And I think it was just a really funny reaction out of her, because she was legitimately startled and very flabbergasted at the idea of, okay, she's the one that's really being the head of this alliance.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. Like, while there is some social stuff, and while I think there is truth to her being the glue, it is amazing that in a episode where Tony and Verna aren't mentioned at all as possible targets, Versailles and Luzon are the ones who are like, we have to go for, like, the kingpin. We have to go for the most important member. You know who I'm talking about. Katinka. Like, it's just yes. A bit funny optically that that happened.
The secret weapon. Well, I mean, to the point about Tony, though, I mean, she did win immunity. So mm-hmm. I feel like any talk that was against her was quelled, which, good on Tony, you know, the tried and true doghouse challenge. And I do wonder, you know, I don't know if people are really going to start looking at her as like a big challenge threat, but I wonder, with Vusi gone, who's going to be next in line to earn that moniker?
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be someone like Katinka. And we've seen Katinka and Vusi be the best of challenges in the recent episodes. So maybe it's not a coincidence again there that they were the two targets as well. But this challenge, it seemed way too easy at the beginning. Like, no one really had a problem with the first two rungs. And then it seemed just like way too difficult, as it always is, to get up on the top there. But I don't know. I'm like, was it the same like size for the rungs? Because everyone was just like standing there, like, they seemed okay.
Well, I wonder if it's, you know, usually, it looks like it took place within like a cove or like some sort of closed off area. Usually when this happens, I feel like it takes place out in like the middle of the ocean where the waves are rolling more and it can rock it more, which, I don't know if somehow people who participated in this challenge previously are listening, looking at you, Wu, I know you're listening, but
he
they have other insight
every week.
Yeah, the Woo question, the Woo corner. Welcome to Woo corner. I can't wait for that segment this week. But yeah, I feel like maybe that's it, is that there are just a lot of rolling waves when it takes place out in the ocean, that it bucks things more and throws more people off. Whereas, like you said, nobody falls off until they reach that tippy top of the doghouse. And after that, what, like seven of them fall off at once? So it's a pretty high, you know, attrition rate until the final part.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably correct. I hadn't thought about that, but that seems like a very good point. I mean, they were probably hoping that everyone would be just like a little bit tipsy from the gin and tonic. So they were like, okay, well, they'll be standing on these doghouses, but they'll also be drunk. So that'll be fun, and they'll just all fall off.
Can we talk about that? That is so irresponsible. Like, I thought that Survivor Amazon, them giving them a fridge of Coke as a reward, I thought was pretty irresponsible, considering that, like, that is not the most hydrating drink, but giving them what they thought was a pitcher of water only for them to be gin and tonics. Maybe I'm biased because I detest gin, so I know that, like, I would have given my share to somebody else, but I just think the idea of, like, instead of water, we got you a pitcher of gin and tonics is like something that a lecherous, like, lecherous nightclub in like Cabo St. Lucas, Mexico does during like spring break to bring people in.
Yeah, it's funny because they thought it was lemon water. They were very excited about that. Then they drink it and it's alcohol. I'm like, they just spiked their drinks. Like, they thought they were having non-alcoholic drinks and they weren't. Like, they've already had like a big sip. Like, That would not be fun. Like, I personally, I'm not a big drinker at all. I would give me the lemon water over the gin and tonic any day. I know this is blasphemous to a lot of listeners probably, but like, I wouldn't be very happy to just like take a sip of something and find out that it's alcohol, especially when you're out there and like while they had just eaten, they're not like exactly having like three meals a day or anything like that. I was like, this is bizarre.
Maybe they wanted like a drunk merge moment. They're like, you know what? Tom and Palau was so much fun. Penner and Cook Islands was so much fun. Let's make that happen. But I totally would have been the same way. Like, I would have seen this classic clear liquid and I would have chugged the entire glass before realizing that something went wrong. Maybe once it started tasting like a Christmas tree, maybe I realized that, oh, nope, that's gin. It's like, you know, when you used to be in high school and like the people would sneak the Tagozies into school, like they filled the water bottles with vodka and you like try to grab one and you try to like drink it down. You're like, man, I'm thirsty. And you realize that you accidentally got drunk at 2:30 p.m. I'm sure everyone's had that experience, right?
Yes, I think. No, what?
That explains that directly figures into the understanding as to why I was the way I was in the first like 20 minutes of this podcast.
I think we're really getting some important places here. We're analyzing the episode and we're analyzing your psyche.
Yeah, I have a nice big bottle of water in front of me. I think it is. We shall find out by the end here.
Who wants to accidentally drink alcohol? Again, this might be the fact that I don't really drink, but that would be a nightmare to me and could have turned out badly on the show. But it didn't seem like anyone was throwing up and then, you know, putting their hands in the water that they just threw up in. I can't get that out of my mind. I know it was last week.
Oh, my
God.
It
was so disgusting.
If Tom puked up the gin and tonic, Shanae would have said, you know what? I don't care if we need his vote. I can't do it. I can't talk to Mr. Puke over there. I'm done with him.
Yeah. Well, at least he's still there. And so is Shanae, so that we can see more reactions to her, you know, watching him eat. And I still love the fact that Tom and Palesa are there together. You know, they've been feuding since day one, basically. And they're still there at the final nine together. Palesa does have an idol. So, yeah, the further that those two get in the game together, I absolutely love. I want to talk about Palesa, Shanae and Vusi and what they kind of did in this episode. As I said, they came in looking to target Tom, which, again, even if that had worked, I don't think was a good situation for them, because then they just would have been in the minority next week. So they needed Tom as a vote. The fact that their plan was rocks as a best case scenario wasn't looking great for them. They had three shots at swing votes, and there was three independent swing votes. They lost at every single one of them. It wasn't great for Luzon. Again, I think that they're all good players, especially Shanae and Palesa, but they were kind of boxed in this episode.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think they could have done?
Yeah, well, I want to talk a little bit about Versailles as a concept, because I do think that almost like beyond their control, they were a little bit screwed here. Like, some of it was them, you know, by their own fault in some regard, like, for example, voting out Mariska, which was like their only tie to the outside world, basically. Obviously, there was some social stuff that came into that, and that was just a disaster. But they vote out Mariska. And then just structurally, they've been so isolated for so long. They haven't gone to tribal council in so long. They've basically just been on their own island, getting annoyed at Tom every week. Like, every time we check in with Versailles on the podcast, we're like, what's going on? Oh, Shanae is just more annoyed at Tom this week. And then all the other tribes are doing crazy things, swapping with each other, going to a double tribal council, like making huge blindsides. And so they've just been in their bubble, and that did not really work out for them so well. You know, they didn't have any Mindanao on their side after Mariska went that they could even recruit to their side. They didn't have anyone the other side who could maybe bring in the numbers for them. Obviously, Annalise might have been like that, but they lost her. Josie, I think, could have been a really big thing in that. And if she was here at the merge, she might have brought in some numbers. But they were just so isolated, and some of it I blame them for voting out Mariska, or maybe not taking that elevated strategy, as I said, to think, okay, let's save a Josie and throw the challenge and take out Tom, for example. But I do think that a lot of it was beyond their control, and just structurally, they were just all by themselves playing the game like in parallel to everyone else.
So, I mean, would you suggest then a change to a game mechanic? Because, I mean, I guess to your point, the thing that might have screwed with them was the fact that we had that double swap that happened in the tribal council where Martinez quit, where, I mean, Josie and Annalise were basically set up on both those sides of the next people to go. And it could have became a scenario where, okay, it's these, you know, four people versus the rest of the Mindanaos. So they sort of missed out on that. But I wonder if, you know, everything ended up unlucky because there happened to be four Luzon over there. Like you said, if Mariska was over there, maybe things would be a little more complicated because, you know, she was connected to them. I mean, you know, she was so well connected to God. I can't remember who was, I think it was maybe Tony was the one who was crying about, you know, she was my best friend out there. Or maybe it was PK or someone like, Martinez was the one.
Yeah, Martinez called her a best friend. Tony cried when she got swapped over to the Luzons, but then seemed very much like F when she saw she was voted out. So who knows?
Yeah, so maybe it was a thing of like combine that with the fact that they just happened to miss out on the opportunity to bring more Mindanao members into their camp.
Mm.
That when they came in, like you said, they didn't have many outs. So yeah, I'm not gonna like harsh on them too much because they had very limited options to begin with. I mean, I guess you could say that not necessarily throwing the challenge to get rid of Tom, but maybe their treatment of Tom, especially from Chane's perspective. I feel like, you know, he sort of felt like the, with the Vusi and Palesa, it was sort of like the story of the scorpion and the crocodile of like, I knew you were going to do this because you did this to me before. But I think he was so hurt to find out that Shanae was sort of shit talking him behind his back. And when he had this conversation with her, a really dramatic moment where she said, you know, do you trust me? And he says, I don't know anymore. I think that came from a very sincere place that he felt that he was so close with her, but he's seen her slip away in the past week or so that he, I think that really hurt him emotionally and definitely was a contributor to him flipping on her.
Yeah, it was hard. It was like watching a couple break up where like you've seen her just like completely go away from him in the last few weeks, but she finally have to actually have that conversation with him, which was kind of painful to watch from his perspective. It's hard to blame Visayas too much because the things that I'm suggesting are so difficult to know what's happening on the other side to the point where you throw a challenge after being again so isolated from them for so long. The Mariska thing, as we saw, that was just complete disaster. Some of that was Mariska's fault. A lot of that was actually Mariska's fault. Some of it was their fault, maybe, that they didn't retain that number. But it's so hard that they just happened to structurally be on their own. And I do think it's very interesting when you have these like three tribes and then you do these double tribal councils, because in Australia, in Australian Survivor, when they did that, they then, within those iterations of those tribes for a couple of votes, but then they ended up doing like a massive shuffle between the three tribes shortly after. Whereas with this one, they really just ran it down to the merge, and Visayas misses out on that like intermingling, on that shared experience. So it just contributes even more to them just being like outside of it. And you can see even Shanae's frustration in this episode. She's like, I don't feel good about having tied myself to Vusi and Palesa, but like, I don't really have anyone else. And that I don't think really is very much her fault. And she had wanted to connect with Mariska originally because at the time Luzon weren't doing super well. And she wanted to get that in with Mindanao. And obviously it didn't work out like that, but she was thinking about that from the get go. And it's really just come to fruition here. I do think that the way they treated Tom is probably like the biggest mark against them. You know, to come in and with this weird half measure of like, hey, we'll go in with a minority and we'll vote out one of the only people we've played with in Tom because we have to vote him out because we have such a terrible relationship with him. Like, that's your social game and what you've done to need to do that and to have then needed him as a number and not been able to retain him as a number. Again, speaks to the fact that he's like, you treated me really badly. Clearly, Vusi and Palesa have never liked me. They've never hidden that. And Shanae has, you know, gone away from him to the point where he could see that it had happened. So to lose that number just outright, they only had a few people to play with. They only had four people on Visayas the whole time and they completely lost one of them. So the least they could have done while they were playing their own game away from everyone else is try and retain Tom to some degree.
Yeah. Well, speaking about Palesa a little bit, I've seen this go around a bit after the episode aired of, you know, with the way that PK and Tony quote unquote split the votes, why did Palesa not think about playing her idol on Vusi? That would get Katinka out and the three of them would still be in there. What did you think about that idea? Were you okay with Palesa holding on to her idol, even if it meant getting rid of arguably her closest ally?
Well, there is a couple of things with the idol. Firstly, if they really do think it's going to be 5-5 and they're going to go to Rocks, you know, play the idol in the hope that you get it right and you don't have to go to Rocks. It's better to not go to Rocks. That's why I really think they're chasing the high of the Rocks. Like, I really, really think they're trying to get their Rocks off because... Now, I'm saying it, Mike. Look what you're doing to me. But like,
I've infested you.
They weren't even trying to, like, make the situation not happen. They were just, like, very happy not to use the idol. It just didn't seem like an option at all. So I think if they're going to go to Rocks, play the idol because... then you might win. You might actually get the idol on the right person and then you've won the vote and you have a majority coming back. Or at least you've, you know, got better chances because another person from your side is immune. So it works that way. If Palesa knew that the writing was on the wall, you know, they ended up losing 7 votes to 3, basically, the way it came down. Well, then I don't see her playing her idol on Vusi or Shanae. We've always said there's a little bit of separation between her and Vusi from what we've seen. She doesn't tell him when she finds the clue. There's been like, even though they've been very tight, there's been like a little bit of a gap there. And the idol's always been very much hers. So she probably sees it as, why save an ally in order to come back to camp having, okay, if you play the ally, if you play the idol on the right person, which is only a 1 in 3 chance, you come back 3 votes to 6 with no idol. And if you play the idol on the wrong person, which is a likelihood, a 66% chance, then you come back 2 votes to 7 with no idol. So that's tough for her. So if she knew that they were just dead and buried, she, you know, I don't see her playing it on anyone else. I kind of think it's kind of amazing that she didn't play it on herself in order to at least save herself from, again, a rock draw or the actual vote. So that took a lot of courage. And it is particularly ballsy considering that Mindanao did end up having the numbers to split the vote. So they could have taken this as their chance to try and flush that idol for her. They don't do that. They could have put the majority on her and seen how it went, done 4 votes to 3 to 3. They don't do that, but this would have been a really good opportunity for them to do so.
It reminds me a bit of Survivor Exile Island, where I remember one instance where Terry had won immunity for the umpteenth time, and Sally Schumann was like, hey, I'm your only other ally, and I'm up for elimination. Why don't you use the idol on me, or give me the idol to use? Because back then that was like the proto, Tyler Perry idol. But Terry decided to hold on to it because essentially he was going with this rainy day policy of, hey, you know what? Next time I might not win immunity, and I need this just to make sure personally this gets me further in the game. And it's a little selfish, but I can see this ruminate with Palessa as well, that yes, Vusi might be her closest ally, but to your point, it could be something like what happened at the Three Amigos Tribal Council, where, yeah, they got Philip out, but then Malcolm and Reynolds were the next two to go.
Yeah.
Where, like, you're buying yourself another 3 days in the game, and that's great if you're Sandra Diaz-Twine, but for a lot of other people, 3 days might not amount to squat, especially when people know, hey, she has no idol, her defenses are down. So I do feel like Palessa made a good decision for Palessa. Was it obviously a good decision for Vusi? No, because if she played it correctly, he would have stayed in the game. But I can understand why she would want to jettison that cargo in favor of making her boat lighter, that she can hopefully go, you know, farther down the jetty.
Yeah, I mean, for someone like Terry in Panama, he does have, basically, he can probably see himself winning out and just using the idol when he needs to if he loses, and that is what happened. It got him all the way to the final three, but not quite to the very end, but he can see that, basically, that trajectory for him. Whereas Palessa, it's like, is she going to win out? Probably not. And, like, now they're at final nine, she only has one idol. Like, I don't see how it gets her all the way to the end, the way that it could, like, carry someone like a Terry. So it's still not a good situation for her, but I wouldn't expect her to play it on an ally and just basically preserve her minority. Like, if it's a sinking ship anyway and she can see that, like, why try and keep it afloat for 3 more days and then just, you'll get picked off the next time when you have no idol and you've just pissed them off a little bit more. I do think it was interesting, though, that they could have known who it was, because PK, who was on their side for a lot of this episode, gets told the real plan by Tony at a point. So he could have told them, but he probably just saw that Tom wasn't in it. So yes, he could go and tell them. They could play the idol on Vusi. They might win that vote and take out a Katinka, but then they're very much like line in the sand, 4 against 5 next week. So he probably was just like, without Tom, there's absolutely no point. So didn't relay that information. And yeah, I don't have really that much of a problem with Palessa not playing the idol, but I did think it was very bizarre that the idol wasn't even talked about when they thought it was going to be a 5-5 and a rock draw. Then she should have played the idol. But once she's in the minority, if she's aware of it, I don't think she should have played it for anyone else. She should have played it for herself. Very ballsy.
Yeah, well, I wonder if we talked about how PK saw the writing on the wall. Maybe you see someone like Palessa and Vusi and Chane knew as well, and they were trying their best to really speak up against it at Tribal Council, but I mean, Vusi, even, you know, he was not surprised, that he said multiple times. He said he was bung scared, I believe it was, which this was like what was going on in my brain at the time, Shannon. I thought he was talking about that he was like, the bugs scare him, so he's okay with going. then I thought he said bug scared, like they were so scared their eyes were bugging out. But I looked this up, and apparently, like, bung scared is like a South African term, because bung, I think, is another way of like saying afraid, right? So he was saying that, oh, the other, I went out because I'm a threat, everyone else was afraid of me.
Yeah, that's not a term I've ever used, and let's not make it the hashtag because I don't know how to spell it. But yeah, bung scared is like most of the words that Vusi said on Survivor.
I mean, that's what he repeated nonstop as the votes kept coming in.
Yeah, I just have one more thing on this, the way that Palesa, Shanae, and Vusi kind of go for this vote and what they did. Again, they lose in every aspect. Like, they lose that immunity, which it's Shanae versus Tony. It's kind of like an encapsulation of that battle. They lose every single swing vote. They lose Vusi here. So it didn't go well for them. But I also think it's interesting when you are attempting to go for a rock draw, when the best case scenario for you is a rock draw, why do you vote for your actual target? They're like, we really, really want Katinka out, so we're going to vote for her and then go to rocks. It's like, well, you've now made Katinka immune. Like, just like a weird way to, like, probably some elevated thinking would help there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, if we're going with this logic that they knew that, you know, things were not going to turn out the way they did, maybe it was sort of like their Sheehan from All Stars way of saying, like, I'm voting for the true person who's running the show, and the effort of, like, maybe placing a target on her back, which begs the question. We have Shanae and Palesa obviously on the outside looking in of now seemingly this, like, seven person alliance of the former Mindanaos with Annalise and Tom. What do you think is going to happen next? We've been so right in predicting what's going to happen next. Let's just keep it a great track record so far.
We're Oracle.
Do you think it's as simple as, like, okay, we'll split the votes, Shanae plus we'll play an idol and Shanae will go home? Or do you think they have a chance to crack this alliance of seven right now?
That would really devastate me. I desperately don't want Shanae to go home next week as a split vote, like, plan B option. That would be really, really painful. Look, Palesa has an idol, obviously, so that'll help her. Shanae, I think, I might be completely speculating here, but I think hopefully Annalise could help her from the inside. If she really does have so much control, she was the one who here said, okay, you know, Vusi, we'll go for Vusi, and they do get him out. Could she save her old friend, Shanae, who they've always had a good connection. I don't know why she would immediately gun for her unless they're just very much like, that's completely done and I'm splitting with them so entirely that I won't even help Shanae for a vote. I think that could help her. Plus, I think just by virtue of the fact that we've watched these people play now for 9 episodes, you know, it could just be one element of conflict, like one fight where it's like, okay, it becomes one of those two people. PK, he's a wild card, and people were talking about him as a target in this episode already. Tom, who knows what he'll do? He might piss some people off. He could go. Like, I think anything could happen there. So I don't think it's completely set in stone, but it's not looking great for sure.
I mean, you throw in an interesting scenario where, let's say, Annalise does sort of extend the olive branch to Shanae and says, okay, bygones be bygones. Let's work together now that you sort of have cut yourself loose of Palesa and Vusi. Because if we assume that Palesa is going to play her idol next round, then the majority alliance is going to say, okay, well, we need to throw our votes onto someone else. And that begs an interesting question. You could say, okay, Shanae, you know, last in, first out. You could say Tom. He's someone that we don't really know that
he's
well.
Tom.
He's Tom. You could say PK. What the hell is he doing? This fight between Tom and PK next week is going to be really interesting. We'll see if that has ramifications. So I still see, personally, this, like, core alliance of the former Mindanao members still holding the power next week. But I do feel like when it comes to who will go home between, like, your Palesa, your Shanae, your PK, and your Tom, it could be any of those four, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I would be very surprised if, like, PK and all of them got together with all these ragtag people and actually, like, made a genuine attempt at one of the Mindanao power players. I think it'll more be just be them deciding what happens. But they have so many options. Like, really, everyone is a problem for them. Everyone's giving them a headache. Tony and Verna probably feel like they're babysitting to a degree with some of the people they have to control. So it'll probably just be who gives them the biggest headache that day, and they'll just go for that person.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who's the least annoying today? Great, you're going with me to the final three. Everyone else can go.
Yeah. Do you want to do a little bit of a eulogy for Vusi here? Like, as we said, more of the underedited character at the merge, but wasn't loving his chances when they mentioned again on the previously on what a challenge beast he was.
Well, I think they need to sort of create the narrative, because, again, Vusi is someone who's sort of been underdeveloped. We need to find out a bit about why they specifically went for him. So it's pretty easy rationale. They felt like of those three people, Palesa has an idol and Vusi is much better at challenges than Shanae. So even though Shanae lasted longer than Vusi did in this challenge. So, yeah, he had to go. He showed himself to be like a more utility player because, you know, he in the past few episodes, he sank the baskets for Visayas. He finished the puzzle for Visayas and he did the ball maze for Visayas, which, as you said, Katinka did as well. But I feel like Vusi was the one who was getting sort of all the airtime to him. From a personality perspective, admittedly probably not the most magnetic person in the cast. Not to say he was a total dud. I think he was just a more like run of the mill kind of normal guy.
Yeah, he was actually normal.
Yeah, which is saying something in this season. But you made this point about like Lisa on Survivor New Zealand as well, that like sometimes it's refreshing to see a normal person on there. And to see Vusi also be, it's so interesting to sort of track the chronology of things, where Vusi in particular was so adamant about not throwing a challenge to get rid of Tom, when arguably that's maybe the decision point that could have screwed him in this game.
Yeah, and I think that that speaks a lot to the way he approached the game and the kind of player that he was, where it's like, everyone thinks I'm a massive threat. How will I deal with this? And he's like, well, I'll just kind of win out to the end. Like, that's his main plan. Obviously, he does go to Vern at first. He does try to make those strategic connections as well. But like, he was basically like, okay, I'm a physical threat, so the way I'll deal with that is by winning challenges, which is a very two-dimensional way of looking at the game. And again, to not throw a challenge when it might have benefited you, and to lose that connection with Tom, just all those things came back to bite him. I also think being like the second Tupelesa, who has an idol and is kind of a scary player, can basically be not a good situation as well.
Yeah, and what I will say about Vusi as well, and this will sort of be a plug for people, so on the Survivor South Africa website, they've released like these videos every week of like the unedited tribal council voting confessionals, and like Nico's journal, where he sort of just gives these platitudes every week about playing the game with clips from the episodes interspersed in there. But they've started posting Ponderosa videos there, and I will say, it is apparently no VPN required. I was able to access the clips and watch them from the good US of A. So I encourage everyone, you know, don't be deterred by, oh, I'm not in that country. Go out and watch them. Because the one thing I picked from Vusi's press that he did was that he said that he was rooting for Palesa and Chane, obviously. But he said, if I have to root for Mindanao, I'm rooting for Tony. We made a really close connection. So for what we said about, you know, Werner, Vusi going for Werner, to have him sing praises for Tony towards the end, I don't know, maybe I'm sort of just manifesting this idea of a Tony Werner insert third person here final three, but maybe that's something that we should start tracking, is like, of the two people in, of the people in those pair, who are they prefing, who are the jury members prefing above the other? Because it seems like at this moment Vusi would probably vote for Tony above Werner.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Werner would still have the edge because he just has so many tri connections. But Tony is definitely a final tribal threat in her own right. And if we go there, it might be a bit of a Wendell Dom situation if they don't take each other out before. I still think Werner would have the edge. But yeah, definitely Tony has a lot of power there as well. I've been thinking a bit about, you know, who could sit together in like a final two or three, because we don't know if it's going to be a final two or final three. The fact that it's a final two is fun to me because you only need to beat one person, so technically anyone could win if they're sitting next to Tom, right? And I was thinking like Jean could win sitting next to Tom, and now I'm obsessed with the idea of a Jean Tom final two. I basically won't accept anything else, so Survivor gods, please make this happen, because that would be amazing.
You might be sorely disappointed, but no. I love that idea.
Yeah, Jean in this episode was, they kind of went for her at first, but then she got through it. And now she's just like firmly in the Mindanao camp again. Doesn't know that they were trying to get rid of her in the third episode. This keeps coming back, and she could stay with them for a while longer. Like, what a way for that to happen, for Stacey to quit there and just change the entire trajectory of the entire game.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's that Sandra Diaz spot where the pre-merge is going to be the toughest thing for Jean. She might win some challenges, but now I don't think she's really regarded as a threat. She also had a really fantastic soundbite where Nico's describing this lavish feast we're going to have, and Jean just tells him, stop talking, let's go.
She's the funniest part of every episode, it's true. I've got one more thing before we get to some questions. Was there like a shell with a stamp on it that you thought could have been an idol clue at the bottom of the ocean, or was that completely just me?
Yeah, I was wondering when I saw Tom overturning things, I thought for a second, whenever I see someone out in the ocean, I always get scared because I think that someone's going to, maybe I'm too much conditioned to like the John Carroll or the Rob Zabaknik of it all. But I think every time someone goes out in the ocean, we see shots of them, it's like they're going to injure themselves or something's going to happen. But that would be a crazy place to hide an idol clue. Though, again, the idol clues have been literally all over the furniture and all over the tribal council set. So maybe at the bottom of the ocean floor would not be too out of the question.
I don't know. I was like, am I seeing things? Go back. It's like 14 and a half minutes in, and there's like, it seems like there's a shell with some sort of stamp, almost like what they did in Millennials versus Gen X. I don't know if that's just completely crazy, but there was a close-up on it, and I was like, I would not put it past Survivor South Africa. They like to try things.
That would I mean, that would be, well, we still have three idols in the game at this point.
Yeah, yeah. On that note, I do have some questions we can get into from the listeners. Because John Johnson asked, should there have been an advantage or clue with the merge feast?
No need, in my opinion. And maybe this is me speaking as like a survivor conservative, but I feel like you have, not only do you have three idols, but I feel like the players are frenetic themselves, that there's no need to like put a vote steal in there, like an extra vote to spur things along. You know, I feel like the people will do enough to make the drama in this perspective. Not necessarily, especially if you're doing, if this is like a quote unquote reboot of the series for the South Africa franchise, I feel like the idols and this double tribal council swap is probably enough in terms of, you know, twisty stuff. There might be one more. Again, we're talking about going 16 episodes, and how are we going to get, you know, seven more episodes out of this? There might be one more thing that they do, but I wouldn't really see a reason to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, definitely not an idol clue. No more idols when there's already three in the game. I mean, they could put like an advantage or vote steal. Again, I don't really think that it's necessary. And even if it had been there, like in the burgers and stuff, Tom probably would have inhaled it. So we'll never know if there was actually like a clue there.
Yeah, it was in the milkshake machine and they downed it completely. Or no, you know what? The clue was printed across the bottom of the gin and tonic bottle, but they were too drunk to read it.
Yeah, no, there's probably been clues on Versailles this whole time, but Tom's just been like completely inhaling all of them. So we'll never know some of these things. Maybe they wanted more advantages out in the game.
Yeah, there was like a super idol written across the sauce spoon in the first year's reward, and Bachane was so disgusted that she wouldn't even look at it after Tom licked it.
Yeah, it's like Michaela in Game Changers. Like, what a way, you're so blinded by emotion that you can't see the clue right in front of you just because it's in Tom's mouth.
The spoon will be the main thing on Ghost Island. Spoon Island will be coming soon.
And then
South
wash
Africa
it.
Season 7.
Like, you pick up that spoon. Disgusting. John also wanted to know, what is the best merge feast, Steers or Outback Steakhouse? So I've never had Outback Steakhouse, and I'm guessing you've
I've never had Steers.
All right,
so
how are we gonna do this?
This will be tough to compare. I mean, can you like describe it, the experience of Steers to me? I come from a different place though, because I also worked at an Outback Steakhouse. Oh. So I guess I have a very different perspective than maybe some others who take it in directly. But talk to me about Steers. I know people were saying like, which has worse promotion, Big Brother Canada or Survivor South Africa? We've gotten two advertisers from Survivor South Africa who have been mentioned like three times. Does not compare to Big Brother Canada, which is the equivalent of that one scene from Wayne's World where Wayne and Garth are doing all the product promotion in the course of 30 seconds. So I don't know if it's an apt comparison, but how are you describing Steers to a non-South African crowd? What is the experience like?
I haven't had Steers in 15 years. Like, this is such...
Reach back into those memories. You're on the trip. You're looking there. I don't want that jerky stuff. Give me the Steers. And you take a big bite of that burger. What comes to your mind?
I think it was delicious. But not enough to make me not become a vegetarian. South African food is better than all other food. So I think Steers has got to win.
I am, and you know what, Outback, I think Outback has above Steers. Outback has variety. The Triple H people, they were able to have salad, they had the steak with the potatoes, they had the chocolate thunder from Down Under. This just had like your basic like burger, hand-cut fries, which it did sound good, and then like the milkshakes and the soft serve. So
yeah, but I guess milkshakes and fries are so good together.
That's very true, though. Who knows? I don't know what the dairy might have done to those people, but I guess it would have all been worth it.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think that's, for me, Steers wins. But having covered now Survivor South Africa and Survivor New Zealand, the sponsors are very much like the lifeblood of these shows. So I'm never going to be mad at it. I hope everyone sponsors these two seasons so we get so many more because they've both been amazing. But yeah, I will do whatever the sponsors want me to do, you know, short of actually eating a burger because I can't. Or short of eating tuna, which was the sponsor of Survivor New Zealand. I'm actually not a very good audience member for these brands, but I will do what I can to help these brands so that they keep investing in Survivor so we keep getting more seasons.
Just buy them and like give them to somebody else. Here's a comparison I'll make. I don't know if you've ever had Hungry Jack since you were in Australia, but how would you say that compares to Steers? Let's compare those two at least, since you've had experience with those both.
Well, yeah, Hungry Jack's I think is just like a little bit like... It's just like a lower class. Well, not, it's just not as good. It's more like a Macca's, McDonald's, which is what we call Macca's here. Yeah, that's more
funny because Macca's is like the colloquial for the play Macbeth. So I love how it describes multiple pieces of pop culture.
Well, it's not Macbeth here. Here it's McDonald's, Macca's. We're learning so much about different cultures, South Africa, Australia, trying to compare these different restaurants that neither of us have been to both. So yeah, it's just like a cultural feast here on the Survivor South Africa podcast. But Fiona Wall-Minimi says, if you were handing out chizzy points, would Tom be in the running? So a quick explainer for people who aren't listening to the New Zealand podcast. We give points every week for the three best players of the episode. And Tom would be in the conversation. Like, I don't know if he'd get a vote because, as we said, Tony was so good. Verna was so good. Annalise were great. They were probably like the three best players this episode. But Tom would at the very least be an honorable mention.
No, all 3 points go to PK for me. I would say that I know you guys like to do like honorable mentions. I feel like Tom would get an honorable mention for me because he at least, like we talked about in the very beginning of this podcast, he acknowledged the situation that he was in. There have been countless players where, whether due to the great gameplay of the people working with them or just their bad gameplay, they don't necessarily realize how bad of a position that they're in. So I'm going to give Tom credit for at least seeing the situation and making a decision based on that. But like you said, the merge is a pivotal time, and there were three people who made such good decisions at the merge for the betterment of their game that I think that they would probably take precedent above Tom. Though he gets a participation medal, so that's all he wants.
Yeah, I mean, he did go from being like what we thought could have been a really easy consensus boot to the pivotal swing vote, to the most important person. It kind of reminds me of Ace in that first episode.
Ace, yes.
Yeah. And then Mariska obviously did the opposite, where she was a swing vote and she got voted out. So the power structures within one episode of Survivor South Africa can just completely turn on their head. We've now seen that so many times.
Yeah, I also love, did you notice this, that there was an ace pun going on in this episode? When Palesa was talking with Tom, she's like, I have an ace up my sleeve, and Tom just goes, pun intended.
And then they laugh. Best friends.
If Tom did not get on my good side before that moment, he definitely did now. A pun lover is a man after my own heart.
It's true. That was why he gets the honorable mention. That might bump him up to actually getting some chizzy points. It's like he did pretty well and he acknowledged a pun. So that was very good. Lisa Marie Lynn Garcia says, what in the heck do they use the rusty bowl for at camp? Yeah, if it can actually dye Sharnay's hair, I really hope they're not eating out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe you only have a variety of utensils you can use. I wonder, because they got this like completely refurbished camp. I don't know if they just like rebuilt the old Luzon camp, because remember, they got like the new camp that they won. If they just sort of supersized it, and to speak of Macca's, and, you know, increased its size and gave it a bunch of new things and alcohol. But yeah, I don't know where that rusty bowl came from, but I hope nobody's touching it. I don't want anyone to get, nobody's gotten medevac so far. I don't want tetanus going on out in the Philippines. It is a little suspect.
Yeah, I was a bit confused. Like, so they went to an entirely new beach and made them a new camp. Is that what happened? Or were they going back to that Luzon? I still couldn't really work it out, but it looked very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, maybe those that are paying more attention to the foliage, or maybe if there are any contestants listening, they can tell us. But my best guess would be if they just want to utilize, I mean, they put in all the work of like, you know, pimping out that camp to make it great. Wouldn't it just make sense to like shuffle that old shelter out and rebuild a new one instead of having to, you know, completely do a new location entirely?
I don't know. I guess, you know, they did look like that they'd made them a whole shelter and stuff, which, like, I'm not mad at. Some people might be like, oh, that's not pure Survivor and whatever. Like, I don't really care about that stuff. But yeah, I couldn't really tell if they were at Luzon camp. Again, they're so confusing with the stuff when they go to the new camps or the new tribe names. Like, I cannot keep up. So sorry about that.
Yeah, I guess now this is, do we call this then like new Luzon?
new Luzon. I don't know. Well, we might have to give the merge tribe a different name because we can't pronounce our role. We're definitely doing it wrong. So maybe we should make some sort of new name.
Listen, don't say we. I can say our role.
But I don't know if that's right. What is it? We
got a pronunciation sent to us of the Tagalog pronunciation, which is our role. So I'm going to go with that unless I am completely mispronouncing it, in which case I'll learn at some point over the next month and a half or 2 months and a half.
Yeah, I'm just going to avoid saying it entirely, I think, is what I'm going to do.
Just say the Pink Tribe.
Okay, the Pink Tribe. I mean, at least with merged tribes, you don't have to refer to it so much because it's not like one tribe versus the other. Like, it's just basically a group of people. So I think I'll be okay. But last question, a tribe of one on Twitter asks, after this tour de force of an episode for him, forced to pick between Verna or the field as the winner, who would you guys choose? This is a really difficult question, which I think is a testament to Verna's game.
I mean, I gotta stick with my guns here and go with Verna, just because I am honestly... Yeah, I mean, I think he's just... We talked about how fantastic of a position he is so far. Again, I'll put in the caveat that anything can happen, but I feel like he's in such a good position, not only with the safety that he has, but the amount of work he's been able to put in and the relationships he's been building across the board when it comes to possible jury members, that I have to feel like at this moment he's the favorite to win. So I'm going to, you know... I'll stick by my Verner Vinner pick here.
Yeah, I might go with your winner pick as well. Again, I'm so angry that I didn't go with it firstly.
Damn parchment!
All right, well, you made the best winner pick, and I made a pre-merge winner pick. Let's not even talk about it. Let's just not bring it up for the rest of the time that we podcast together. But that's all I have for this episode, Mike. What is the hashtag?
Can we do Tom Plements?
I had so many Tom puns written down. We also had Tomkrin. But we'll do Tom Plements.
Tom Plummet, yeah, it's because Tom Cochran, I really tried to shoehorn in there with the Tom Cochran comparison, and people are inspired put in there, but I feel like Tom Plummet, because we were complimentary of at least the way Tom was portrayed, which I will say the community was not really the past few weeks, so I feel like we need to relish this time before next week when it gets into this big brouhaha with PK and it all goes out the window again.
Yeah. Mike, what's going on with you? What are you podcasting about? Where can we find you on social media?
Well, you can find me on social media at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. I just wrapped up this season of Westworld with Jay and Jack. I'm going to be doing some Big Brother exit press with Parade, as well as some other miscellaneous stuff with Parade. I got to Shannon. I had never been in a helicopter before last Monday when I got to ride in the original Batcopter, which I don't know how familiar you are with the Batman iconography, but that is like the original helicopter from the Adam West Batman TV
series.
That
is so cool.
It was a fantastic experience. I also spoke recently with two writers from Late Night with Seth Meyers, had a really nice conversation about their segment, which is one of the most popular viral segments from the show. So be sure to check out all that stuff on Parade. I'll have some stuff going on with The Hollywood Reporter as well in the next couple of weeks. But I'm super excited because I am going to be giving out my own Shizzy points this coming week, as I'm going to be hopping over with you, Shannon, infiltrating your home with your other, while you're seeing your other International Survivor podcast. I'm so excited to be covering Survivor New Zealand with you on this week. We got to preview the season together, and I'm so excited to see how our predictions sort of settled out. I mean, that's when we both kind of biffed it with our winner picks. So yeah. We're in the same boat there.
Yeah, Mike, your life is way too good. So you get to ride in a Batcopter. Your winner pick is Verna, and now you're going to be podcasting with me twice in 1 week. I'm like, Mike Bloom, Will, your life is so great.
Your life is so great. Your winner pick is Werner. Like, I look at this. That should be like a life achievement, like something I put on my resume as like a credit. Well, I did have a good winner pick for Survivor South Africa.
I just have so many regrets. Like, if you don't have that winner pick and you were so close to making that winner pick, I think you would know how I feel. The Batcopter thing also cool, but I think it's like, put it in order. Verna's your winner pick. That's the best thing going for you right now. Then you get to podcast with me twice in 1 week about Survivor New Zealand and South Africa, and then the Batcopter. Amazing couple of weeks for you.
Yes, not to insult you, you're like the Hungry Jacks, whereas the Batcopter is the Steers. I guess we can make Verna Outback just by, you know, process of elimination.
It's so insulting that you called me Hungry Jacks. Well,
listen, you could be Mackers.
You didn't say it very well. It's like Mackers.
Mackers?
Mackers.
Mackers.
Okay, we're losing people. You're never going to get it.
We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
Okay, well, my announcement was that I have Mike Bloom on the Survivor New Zealand podcast next week. I also spoke to Shannon Quinn about the episode last week. She's from Survivor New Zealand. That was a ton of fun. A lot of people have been tweeting hashtag rhino balls to me to find out why. Please listen to the podcast. I think that deserves
I like how you're worried about bung scared, but you're fine with rhino balls.
I'm fine with Rhino Bowls. I'm just going to take that clip and edit it and just have it in my life. But another thing that's really exciting is that we have a new International Survivor HapUps feed. It used to be the Survivor New Zealand feed, but that didn't really make any sense now that we're doing South Africa coverage every week. Plus, Survivor Australia is starting, so Nick iDance is going to be doing a lot with that. So that there's a now an International Survivor HapUp feed. So search that on iTunes and your podcast feed. Subscribe, follow it, leave us a review. That would be really, really awesome. You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Shannon Gates. Mike, you're at A Mike Bloontype. Don't know if you gave that before. But yeah, that's all that we have for the episode this week. Thank you guys so much for listening again with us. Mike, thank you very much as always for being here. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and I will see you guys next week. Bye.